the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good Thursday morning, and thanks for gathering your agriculture news right here on Farm City Newsday. The AgNet West team is out at the third and final day of the World Ag Expo on the grounds of the International Agri Center. And speaking of the World Ag Expo, they teamed up with E.M. Tharp for this year's We Believe in Growing Scholarship. The winners of the scholarship were announced during the show, and they include two Tulare County students who have a passion for agriculture. The first winner is Chastine Gist. She's a senior at Tulare Western, and she hopes to attend Cal Poly to study agriculture business. She's currently the Tulare FFA chapter's vice president. The second award winner is Jacob Martinez, and he's a student at Strathmore High School, and he also plans to study agriculture business, but as a bulldog at Fresno State. He, too, is an officer for his FFA chapter and also has plans to own his own agribusiness. Both young adults are members of the Tulare County Farm Bureau Youth Leadership Program. If you plan on heading to the World Ag Expo today, gates open at 9 a.m. Use code AGNET. That's AGNET for $3 off your online ticket purchase. Moving on to what's happening in today's show. Yesterday, we touched on cover cropping in California. And today, Brian German is sticking to that theme with a report on barriers to implementing cover crops in the Salinas Valley. You'll get details from one of the session presenters at this year's AgSafe Activate 2020 conference. But first, I'm going to start off today's show touching on the importance of advancements in technology and its role in the agriculture industry. So let's get to it. Advances in technology has aided the agriculture industry, and it was imperative to get all three countries on the same page when it comes to innovation and the USMCA. Sometimes technological advances can become a hurdle in trade negotiations. However, Deputy Secretary for Agriculture Stephen Sinski says under the USMCA, there are special provisions that allow the three countries to use innovation to feed a growing population.
It has been innovation. It has been technological developments and continuous improvement that has allowed U.S. agriculture to prosper and thrive. It has resulted in, over the last 90 years, we're producing 500% more, five times more, on 9% fewer acres. And you don't get that. You can't achieve that without innovation and technological progress. And under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, there's special provisions that deal with the new technologies and innovations that commits our country to work with Canada and Mexico and those countries to work with us to make sure we're facilitating these new technologies that are so important for the future. If we're going to feed a growing world population and make progress on climate change and have less impact on the environment, we need these new technologies. We need new tools. Gene editing. Just think of all the things that are going on with the soil microbiome right now. All of these are going to be new technologies, and we think that by having our three nations here in North America joined together to say, this is how we cooperate, this is how we're going to facilitate these new technologies, that can be a model that can be used and replicated around the world.
And in more agriculture news,
despite the value that cover crops can provide in vegetable systems, there may be barriers for some growers to implement the practice. Vegetable crop and weed science farm advisor in Monterey County, Richard Smith, describes some of the issues that make it difficult for growers in the Salinas Valley to benefit from adding cover crops to their farming system.
The pros of using a cover crop are really high. The reality is that in Salinas Valley, where the rotations are so intensive, people really can't fit them in, and the land rents are very high. So the opportunity cost of having them out there makes it prohibitive of fitting a cover crop in. So as a result, we have probably about 5% of the area is cover cropped in the Salinas Valley. And even though people recognize that they do good things, and they use them as much as they can afford to fit them in, but that's not very much.
Activate 20, the AgSafe annual conference, is coming up March 10th through the 12th and will cover a multitude of issues. Heat and Agriculture Program Coordinator for Cal OSHA, David Horning, highlighted some of the topics he'll be discussing this year at Activate 20, the AgSafe annual conference.
First, I'd like to do some of the top 10 citations that the ag industry sees. I'll also talk about the increase in fatality rate that we saw in 2018. So I'll be covering that, and particularly the high rate of fatalities in the ag industry. It's about five times higher than the average for other industries. I'll also cover some of the new regulations that came out or are planned to come out, specifically, I'll talk about the nighttime illumination regulation. I'll talk about indoor heat and where that's at in the regulatory process. And I'll also talk about the new wildfire smoke regulation that went into effect last July.
For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Stay tuned with AgNet West and this radio station as you'll hear the full interview later in the show. In a report provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, fresh off of a phase one trade deal with China, U.S. President Donald Trump has his sights on a new deal with the European Union. The president wants to restructure over $1 trillion in U.S. trade relationships with the European Union. Reuters says that's already raising the specter of another major trade war as the global economy is slowing. Trump has long complained that the EU position on trade, quote, is worse than China's. He adds, Europe has been treating us very badly. Over the last 10 to 12 years, there's been a tremendous deficit with Europe that have incredible trade barriers. So we're going to start with that. Meantime, EU officials say they're willing to work with the U.S. president to address some of the challenges in the relationship. A German conservative lawmaker tells Reuters that Trump needs to remember the EU and the U.S. are, quote, evenly matched in the economic realm and that they will defend themselves if the need arises. An EU official says we will respond to U.S. tariffs and we know how to structure them to be effective. Reuters says there is a, quote, mini deal like the phase one agreement signed with China. However, that likely won't solve the main issues that would allow both sides to declare a truce. You've been listening to Farm City News Day. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Remember to subscribe to the podcast to get updates on the latest episodes. You can follow AgNet West online at agnetwest.com and on social media. Remember to like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also get weekly AgNet West headlines right to your email inbox. Go to agnetwest.com to sign up for the e-newsletter. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
A new multi-state research and extension collaboration is looking to develop and deliver solutions to mitigate the economic impact of insecticide-resistant weevils. Assistant Cooperative Extension Specialist at UC Davis and one of the leads on the Resistant Alfalfa Weevil Project, Ian Grettenberger described what the collaborative effort will be addressing.
So our project's looking at insecticide resistance and alfalfa weevils really across the western U.S. I'll be focusing a lot in California. And the goal here is to start monitoring and putting numbers on insecticide resistance, particularly as it relates to pyrethroids in terms of products that we already know there is resistance, but then also focusing on some newer products like Indoxacarb or Steward, where we don't anticipate resistance yet, but we really want to start gathering baseline data so that we can detect resistance as it develops, and we're gathering that baseline data now to prepare for the future.
For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Well, in today's livestock news, with more dock workers and others critical to China, Hong Kong's food distribution chain now returning from an extended Lunar New Year holiday break, it looks like a growing backlog of imported meat may begin making its way more smoothly into that market. With more on that story, here's Joe Sheely.
In this U.S. Meat Export Federation report, Joel Haggard, Senior Vice President for the Asia Pacific, provides another update on the impact of the coronavirus on meat demand and distribution in the China-Hong Kong region.
Meat Export Federation staff continue to assess the meat market impacts of the unfolding coronavirus outbreak. Uncertainty among the population prevails, especially as the infected and mortality tolls continue to increase. We're experiencing some supermarket runs, but as of the moment, these runs have tended to be on household cleaning products, large bags of rice, masks, of course. We're not seeing out-of-stock meat shelves. Meat seems to be available, all species. Our staff in China have been making visits to customer stakeholders, including both restaurant and supermarket operators. And while food service is being severely challenged because of the sharp decline in traffic, retail is doing well, including online. Food supply chains appear to be functioning. There are indeed bottlenecks, but we must also keep in mind that most of the country is still in the Lunar New Year shutdown mode. Many in the food and meat supply chain have not fully returned to work, and that includes port workers. So the circulation of food and meat would have been constrained regardless of the coronavirus. We had on top of that massive imports of meat and poultry in December and during the first part of January. And so one could conclude that a goods pileup was all but inevitable anyway. Moving forward, with the Chinese leadership calling for normal production, we should see a return of workers that staff the meat supply chain. And although nobody seems to be talking about ASF at the moment, it's all about the coronavirus, large shortages are still apparent from that outbreak. I was quite interested to see local pork prices stay so high over the holidays and with so few people venturing out and with food service demand plummeting. It's just a sign in my mind that this ASF-induced pork shortfall is still very much with us. So fundamental imported meat demand should continue to be at an unprecedented level.
For more information, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And building on its updated national manual launched back in the summer of 2019, the Beef Quality Assurance Program, otherwise known as BQA, has updated its online training modules to make them more realistic and useful. The new modules are now available to those who are first becoming BQA certified online and those who are getting recertified as required under 3 years. First launched back in 2017, the online training modules have been embraced by more than 100,000 in the cattle industry. BQA certifications are also available at in-person training events offered through state beef councils and other local efforts throughout the country. You can simply learn more about the BQA program at their website, BQA.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
With trade on his mind, President Donald Trump looks for a deal with Kenya. In a report provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, President Donald Trump and the President of Kenya kicked off bilateral trade negotiations last week as they met at the White House. VOAnews.com says this is an unusual effort for the president, who's largely focused on his trade efforts on major economic powers like China, Japan, and the European Union. Now, Kenya ranks 98th among the U.S. trading partners with about $1 billion in two-way trade of goods in 2018. However, a trade deal with Kenya could create a template for future negotiations with other African nations. It would also help to thwart some of China's rising influence on the continent. China took the top spot from the U.S. as Africa's number one trading partner several years ago. Scott Eisner is the president of the U.S. African Business Center at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he says that the agreement is likely to take several years to complete, especially if Trump follows the Trade Promotion Authority law. That requires congressional input for comprehensive trade deals. If the two sides eventually agree, it would be the first trade deal between the U.S. and an African nation. The U.S. currently has 20 free trade deals in place with other countries, but none are on the African continent.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Remember to subscribe to the podcast to get updates on the latest episodes. You can follow AgNet West online at agnetwest.com and on social media. Remember to like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also get weekly AgNet West headlines right to your email inbox. Go to agnetwest.com to sign up for the e-newsletter. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com/growers. The Almond Board of California is consistently adjusting and creating new campaigns for several regions in the European Union. ABC's Director for Europe and Global Publications, Dariella Raffi-Rockhind, says each campaign is unique to the market, and a new one has been recognized with a couple of marketing awards. Brian German has the interview.
Hi, I'm Dariella Raffi-Rockhind, and I'm the Director for Europe and Global Public Relations at the Almond Board of California.
And we're finishing up here at the 2019 Almond Conference, and a lot of information to go over in 3 days. And you were delivering some pretty updated information on what the market, kind of the potential in Europe, and there's some exciting new campaigns that are going to be launched over there. So I'm going to let you kind of walk me through what the ad approach is going to be over there? I know that it's been celebrated with some awards as well.
Sure. So Europe has always been a really important region for the Almond Board, especially as an ingredient market. We know that about 46% of all new products that were introduced with almonds last year happened in Europe. So still a lot of innovation happening on the ingredient side. So we focus very much on the food professional audience, the product innovators, and ensure that they continue to use almonds as an essential ingredient in their products. But we're also very much focused on increasing consumer demand directly from consumers and have them continue to see almonds as a healthy snack. So what we have realized through extensive consumer research is that our consumers in each of the markets that we're in, which are UK, France, Germany, and Italy, behave slightly differently, have different needs, and the way that we market to each one of these targets is a little bit different in each country. So in Germany, for example, we know that the origin of California almonds is very motivating and the lifestyle that comes with that. So we have a campaign there called Snack the California Sun, which is really shifting perceptions from almonds being only a sweet treat, something that they associate with marzipan or with Christmas markets where almonds are eaten as sugared almonds, to a healthy snack. And then in France, the sustainability message and reminding French consumers that almonds are natural is really, really key there. So we have a campaign that we call Nature Does Things Well, which is based on a famous French proverb. And then in Italy, which is our newest market, we have a campaign that is all about reinforcing the energy and the protein that almonds provide. And it's represented by a battery icon filled with almonds, representing that almonds help you recharge your energy. And we're super proud that that campaign, just in literally in the last couple weeks, has won 3 important marketing awards in Italy, including a European award for integrated marketing campaign. So it's nice to see that work being recognized. And then finally, UK, which is probably our longest, the market that we've been in the longest in Europe, we're launching a brand new campaign next month in January called Do You Almond? And we're incredibly excited about it. It's really, it's quirky, it's fun. And what's amazing about it is that it can be extended into so many scenarios. And just by the fact that it's all about Do You Almond, like almonds are truly the hero in all that execution. So stay tuned for that next year.
And you mentioned marzipan just now, and I know that's come up in a couple of different talks kind of in relation to Europe. Explain a little bit what seems to be evolving palate, I guess it would seem, that almonds are being added to even more and more products, and it seems that there's quite a bit of potential for even further involvement for almonds in Europe.
Sure. So I think marzipan is still around, especially in Germany, and people use a lot of marzipan, especially around Christmas time, and you see the little marzipan figurines and animals that are still being used quite a lot. And actually, if you still go to a chocolate aisle in Germany, you will see an extensive array of marzipan products. But there's a changing perception with marzipan, and it's considered a little bit of an older product. It's something maybe grandma will bring for Christmas versus like the kids particularly eating. So there's definitely a shift when we look at the usage of almonds, and we look at Germany specifically. Maybe 5 years ago, marzipan made up quite a big chunk of the categories. We've seen that shift quite significantly, where snack almonds are now the majority of the almonds being used in Germany and in other parts of Europe. So we think with the fact that, like you said, palates are changing, people are wanting more healthy products, less processed products, there is a huge opportunity in Europe still to change those perceptions and behaviors and to introduce more products that are healthy and natural and unprocessed, which is really what consumers are asking for.
Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. Remember to subscribe to the podcast to get updates on the latest episodes. You can follow Agnet West online at agnetwest.com and on social media. Remember to like and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also get weekly Agnet West headlines right to your email inbox. Go to agnetwest.com to sign up for the e-newsletter. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Agnet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now. In today's interview segment, we take a listen to Brian German's interview with David Horning, giving an overview of his presentation that will take place at the AgSafe Activate 2020 conference next month.
We're talking to Heat and Agriculture Program Coordinator for Cal OSHA, David Horning. And David will be one of the speakers at Activate 20, the AgSafe Annual Conference. That's happening in a couple of weeks here at the DoubleTree by Hilton Modesto. And now, David, you're going to be talking about regulations, both some of the new things people need to be aware of, as well as some of the things that are on the horizon. So talk to me about some of the points that you'll be touching on at the conference.
So in my presentation, I'm going to be covering some of the top 10 citations that Cal OSHA has issued to employers this last year. Looking at our data, still one of the top cited things is heat illness prevention. Four of our top 10 are actually covering our heat illness prevention regulation, which isn't too surprising given that each year we do about 4,000 inspections where Cal OSHA evaluates the employer's heat illness prevention program. And of course, many of those employers are agricultural employers. We also cite often for failure to report serious injuries to Cal OSHA. These citations come with a minimum penalty of $5,000, and it continues to be one of our top cited regulations. Notably, this year, as of January, the reporting requirements for these serious injuries has changed slightly, so I'm going to be covering that in my presentation. Lastly, the operation of ag equipment is on our top 10 list. Nationwide, we've got over 100 farm deaths that involve tractors each year, and that continues to be a problem here in California. More than 80% of these tractor deaths are preventable, too, which to me is really sad. With a simple rollover protection device, these can be prevented, yet less than 60% of tractors nationwide have rollover protection. So I'm going to urge all of the employers to make sure that their tractors are well equipped. I'll also talk about the increase in fatality rate that we saw in 2018. We saw death rates go up about 12% here. We've got 46 more worker deaths, so I'll be covering that, and particularly the high rate of fatalities in the ag industry. It's about five times higher than the average for other industries. I'll also cover some of the new regulations that came out or are planned to come out. Specifically, I'll talk about the nighttime illumination regulation requiring lighting at night. I'll talk about indoor heat and where that's at in the regulatory process, and I'll also talk about the new wildfire smoke regulation that went into effect last July.
Now, you touched on workplace fatalities, and unfortunately, that seems to be a rather timely topic with the recent accident here a few weeks ago. And that's why these reminders about safety and regulation are so important, is to try and reduce that number and keep people safe while they're at work.
That's right. Last year in California, we had over 400 worker fatalities. The agriculture industry, as I mentioned, has a rate that's five times higher than the average of other industries. So the agriculture industry is seeing about 11 deaths per 100,000 workers. Or another way of thinking that is for every 10,000 ag workers, one of those workers is dying. So I want to highlight that. Also, one thing that's particularly concerning to Cal OSHA is a dramatic increase in the death toll among workers that are aged 25 through 35. We saw that in the data, the most recent data, and certainly concerning for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a concerning number. And while regulation may not be the most popular subject, it's still important to understand and work within, because at the end of the day, the overall goal is to ensure the safety of employees and coworkers.
We certainly think they're important. We also are under the belief that these safety rules help lower costs by preventing injuries. As many employers know, those injuries of the workers cost them a lot. workers' compensation costs are expensive. Getting new employees, retraining employees that are injured, costs a lot of money. So we're under the belief that these regulations will ultimately save employers in costs.
Great. Well, David, I appreciate you taking the time this morning, and I'm sure we'll be chatting more at the event coming up here.
That sounds good. I'll see you, I think Modesto in March.
Again, if you want to hear more about various regulatory issues as well as other important topics to the industry, you can check out Activate 20, the AgSafe Annual Conference, March 10th through the 12th in Modesto.
And in more agriculture news, Stephanie Ho talks with USDA's meteorologist Brad Rippey about California snowpack.
The storms that have brought precipitation to the Northwest had nothing for California.
California cannot get a flake of snow or really a drop of rain, at least in the key watershed areas. And as a result, we have not seen any accumulations of snowpack to speak of since mid-January, and really very little accumulation going all the way back to late December.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
And consequently, the average water equivalency of the Sierra Nevada snowpack remains stuck at 12 inches. The typical accumulation for an entire season is very close to 30 inches.
We are about two-thirds of the way through California's wet season, which means the snowpack water equivalency at this time of year should be around 20 inches.
So it is looking increasingly likely, barring a big change in the weather pattern in March, that we will see a subnormal snowpack in the Sierra Nevada this year.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgNetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgNetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.